Currently, I'm reading a novel entitled The Elegance of a Hedgehog, written by Muriel Barbery. The novel takes place in a high-end Paris apartment building where the concierge Renee goes to great lengths hiding her intellect and interests. Renee often spends her days reading Tolstoy or reading poetry simply to appreciate the enchantment of words. And Renee does not want the tenants of the building to know what she's about, because she grew up very poor and her family taught her never to fraternize with rich people. Don't interact with rich people because you'll run too much of a risk of being swallowed up and spit out by society. In the novel, we also meet Paloma, a 12-year-old girl living in the building. Like Renee, the concierge, Paloma, the 12-year-old tenant, feels like a misfit. Paloma is highly intelligent, and she feels that she also must hide her philosophical ruminations about life from the people around her who take the easier and cheaper path on tough questions. In her estimation, Paloma is depressed, and she finds little meaning in life. Renee and Paloma feel stuck, and inside they both long to be brave. The spiritual theme of the month is courage. And over the last 15 years, Brené Brown has studied dynamics of fear, shame, and courage. In Brown states of Americans, one thing we have in common is that we're sick of being afraid. We want to dare greatly. We're tired of the national conversation centering on what should we fear and who should we blame. We all want to be brave. I agree with that assessment. And I, too, am sick of being afraid. It makes me sick. And like Renee and Paloma, I want to be brave. And some days I feel like I'm doing it. Some days I feel like I truly am being brave. And some days I do not. My history with fear crosses my lifespan. It's not very unique. Growing up, I was bullied a little bit on the playground. And painfully, I say, growing up, I bullied a little bit on the playground. These days, like many of us, I work to resist dwelling in fear, including simply from too much exposure to sensationalized weather reporting, whipping up anxiety about the next storm. It's 5 days ahead. Everybody get worried. The plow trucks are here. It's 72 hours ahead of time. And personally, I actually despise fear. And I fear. At times, fear drives too many of my decisions. Fear can deter me from sharing an unpopular opinion or reaching out to a friend after we have passed a long period of time without talking. Many of us aspire to live out the sentiments articulated by First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, who said, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop and look fear in the face. You're able to say to yourself, I lived through that, and now I can take the next thing that comes along." Or we like it how John Wayne put it real simple: courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway. I know many wonderful examples of when you were scared and saddled up anyway. You encouraged your daughter to keep playing flute even though you worried she was going to get cut from the orchestra. You exercised in public even though you thought you didn't know what you were doing. You started your own business. After multiple miscarriages, you kept trying to have a baby. That's courage. That's courage. What else? Think of some. What else? There's a lot of examples. And I also know that many of us have struggled with what Brené Brown calls shame-based attitudes. This kind of thinking goes like, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not successful enough. When those thoughts dominate, they prevent us from painting a portrait or giving a toast at a birthday party when we want to tell somebody how much we appreciate them, or offering to volunteer somewhere, worrying that if we do any of those things, our shame thoughts will be reinforced as true. The Latin root for courage is cor. It's also related to heart. One definition of courage involves speaking what is in your heart or taking actions based upon what is in your heart. The good news is the resiliency of the human heart is remarkable. Our Unitarian Universalist faith proclaims that we humans possess magnificent heart power and capacity to live out what our hearts tell us is best. Many times, problems arise when we don't claim our heart power, even when we're called to do so. We don't claim and live out our heart power. Brené Brown advises on how to build and act upon courage capacity. Counterintuitively, perhaps, Brown teaches that being vulnerable increases courage. Many of us have spent a lot of our lives thinking the opposite. Many of us have passed years acting as if some mystical ironclad suit of armor empowers people, protects people to have courage. But there are no spiritually healthy suits of armor that protect from injury all the time. If we carry the myth of that suit of armor too far, we usually end up either hiding in a bunker or plowing people over. Brown writes that the illusion of invulnerability undermines the very response that would have supplied genuine protection. The illusion of invulnerability undermines the very response that would have supplied genuine protection. U.S. President Franklin Roosevelt expressed this wisdom in a famous speech in Paris in 1910. He said, "It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again." To dare greatly, many times you have to get your face marred by dust and sweat and blood. To be courageous, many times you have to come up short again and again. There's no way around that reality. That's one of the reasons why we come together. You can increase your capacity to dare greatly by cultivating wholeheartedness. It's one of the things we do in our faith community. We help each other claim our place as people with inherent dignity and worth. You have inherent dignity and worth. Don't buy into any other myth. Don't get distracted from the reality. You can love, and you are lovable. Don't get distracted by any other baloney. Together, we develop wholeheartedness and courage capacity. And this month's spiritual practices in our curriculum are designed with that goal in mind. I offer a couple of them for you to do. This is in addition to thinking about something, you can do something. Theologian Mary Daly wrote, "Courage is like a habit. It's similar to learning to swim by swimming. You learn courage by couraging. So practice couraging. Do something that takes courage. Just I'm practicing, practicing. Next one. Make it a point to notice when someone does something that may require courage, whether it's a child who dares to come up for the story for all ages without a parent, or an adult who speaks up in a group when someone else is being treated disrespectfully, or something else. But pay attention to it and say, what can I learn from that and do something about it? Incorporate that behavior into my life. With these practices, we can be like Renee and Paloma, growing in courage. Go back to the story of the concierge and the 12-year-old girl in the posh Paris neighborhood for a minute. At one point, a new tenant arrives. They don't get many, it's a lot of, not a lot of turnover in the apartment building, so it's a big deal when somebody new comes. He comes from Japan, Kakuro Ozu. Moves into the building, and Renee, shockingly, finds a new friend in this man, Kakuro. She finds a person with whom she can truly be herself more than she's ever experienced with someone else. But she pulls away because she's been trained. The barriers are up that her family implored her to keep. Stay away from rich people, you'll get hurt. You'll get crushed. But Renee doesn't want to stay with that way of learning. She takes the vulnerability road and tells Paloma everything about her past, how this family teaching came to be. And after she did it, she's sitting there. So it's a older concierge sitting with a 12-year-old in this very simple, tiny apartment on the side where the concierge lives. And Renee says, quite abruptly, I realize I am sitting in my kitchen in Paris, in this other little world where I have made my invisible little niche, a world with which I have been careful never to mix, and I am weeping great warm tears with a little girl with an incredibly warm gaze who's holding my hand and gently caressing my knuckles. I'm weeping hot, long, good tears. And while I'm troubled, I'm also incomprehensibly happy to see the transfiguration of Paloma's sad, severe gaze becoming a well of warmth. My God, I say, regaining my composure, how silly I am. Madame Renee, Paloma says, you know, you're giving me hope again. Hope, I say, snuffling pathetically. Yes, she says, it seems it might be possible to change one's fate after all. Renee and Paloma help each other grow in wholeheartedness. And like them, we can build wholeheartedness. We need to help and receive, help and receive, and we can do that. Imagine a world where we could weep great warm tears while holding hands and thus transfigure sadness into wells of warmth. Imagine a world where we didn't have to live like this, protecting our hearts, but we could go out like this, not with ego, but with love and courage. We could stand up straight with our chests out with warmth. Imagine a world where more of us own our vulnerability, not as degrading, but as part of our heart-centered, precious humanity. Imagine a world where more of us speak up and stand up for what we believe to be true and good. Blessings be. Amen.